This episode of the Beauty Industry Podcast was brought to you by Aesthetics RX. Hello and welcome to the Beauty Industry Podcast, your online support community for the professional beauty industry. I am your host, founding director of Beauty Industry, Tamara Reid. Here, we are closing the competitive gap and speaking your language. This is a platform created and dedicated to the professional beauty industry, valuing community over competition. We serve to help connect you with inspiration from industry experts, expand your knowledge through educational pieces, and bring you the latest in product and technology innovation. This is Beauty Industry. Today, my guest is Nicola Kropak from Aesthetics RX. Often when we speak of the success in the traditional sense, it's referred to as somebody who owns their own business. But today we are speaking with somebody who has reached many levels of success in the form of working for others and building their businesses and brands. With a sound understanding of progression in the industry, Nicola has worked her way from therapist to business owner, educator, and national sales manager in market-leading beauty companies, including Clarins and BLC Cosmetics, before sitting in a senior leadership role for Skinstitute, and now lives a life in the role that fulfills her the most as general manager for Aesthetics RX. This episode is jam-packed with advice from industry advancement, further education, startup and skincare formulation, all the way through to branding, distribution and team leadership. Here's Nicola and I for Beauty Industry. Nicola, welcome to the Beauty Industry Podcast.
Hi, Tamara. It's lovely to join you this morning.
It is the best to join you. I've actually wanted to pick your brain about your career for the longest time, so this is such an exciting moment for me.
That's funny. I mean, we've worked together previously, and but we've probably never really discussed it. Yeah, I know.
Long time between chats as well with coronavirus and everything that's happened. So, yeah, I couldn't think of a more perfect person to have this conversation with. But I want to go all the way back to the start of your career. How did you actually enter into beauty and aesthetics in the first place?
That is such a long time ago, Tamara. It's, you know, when I think about it, it's over 30 years ago. So it's like a distant memory for me. But I've spent my entire career in the beauty industry. Well, how did I get in there? I was always just really passionate about beauty when I was at school. I was into the science type subjects and really enjoyed biology and the human body, study of the human body, all of those sorts of things. And but I just had this passion around the skin, makeup, making people feel really good about themselves. I think that was probably the key thing. I'm a really kinesthetic person, so the, you know, being able to touch somebody and make them feel good in that touch, or being able to maybe guide them with their makeup choices or their skincare, just from a really young age, that's what I was really into. And I was, you know, one of the top students, and for HSC got one of the biggest, best scores in the school, and got into uni to do law, actually. That was more of a family choice rather than my own. And I decided not to pursue that. I didn't go to university. And of course, my family was horrified that I wanted to go to a beauty school instead, because obviously back in the day it wasn't quite the same as what it is now. Certainly wasn't dermal therapies or anything like that. And so I did go to a beauty therapy college. I did do a diploma of beauty therapy, and I just was really keen to build a career in that field. I didn't know that I wanted to, I wanted it to be corporate at that time. I thought that I wanted it to be in a clinic in a spa or a salon. I was always also very, very drawn to the spa and wellness side of the beauty industry as well. When I finished my beauty therapy diploma, I went and worked for a clinic in Prahran, actually. I was living in Melbourne at the time. And then when I was 21, I did open my own clinic, and I had that for 8 or 9 years, but I loved it. But what I loved most was the skincare aspect of it. I had a lot of clients with acne. I don't know why, but I did. Lots of young kids, teenagers, usually their mums would bring them in, that sort of thing. And I was so passionate about helping these kids with their acne, and I was really into the skincare brand that I stocked in my business. And we were one of the top sellers, I suppose, for that particular brand in all of Australia, just this small four-room beauty clinic in Elsternwick in Melbourne. And it was probably from there that I just knew that I wanted to take the step into the more wholesale, more corporate side of beauty from there, really. That's how it started. Long answer, but that's how it started.
No, I love that. I think there's a lot of people, especially our audience, who and just in the industry in general, they have the same dream. You know, they start off as a therapist on the tools, doing treatments, and then they want to go into training or they want to go into sales. How did you bridge that gap? Because sometimes in a BDM role or in a sales role, even in the training role, people say, well, you haven't really had experience. You're just a therapist, to put that in inverted commas.
Yeah, and that was exactly what happened to me, Tamara. So when I decided to sell my business, I sold it, and then I went and lobbed up to the doorstep of Clarins, and I went and I got an appointment with the state manager of Clarins in Melbourne at the time, and I said, oh, here I am. You know, I'm this amazing beauty therapist. I'm quite good at sales as well. I love treating the skin. I want to be a trainer. Will you have me? And she said to me, well, Nicola, that's great, but you don't have any sales experience. What I would recommend is that you go and get that sales experience and then you come back and see me. I was quite taken back by that because I'd been quite successful from a young age. I was earning a lot of money, doing really well, and then she told me that, and I thought, okay, well, all right, I'm going to take her advice. So I ended up working on the Elabache counter at David Jones in Melbourne in Bourke Street, and I was there for probably 18 months. I was the counter manager of that, and it was really fun, but I learned how to sell. I learned how to set sales targets, budgets, train the other therapists on the counter how to achieve those targets, and how to do something called cold canvassing, which was targeting shoppers as they were walking through David Jones, looking at clothes or whatever it was, and then grabbing those people nicely, of course, coming and sitting them down, doing a consultation, finding out, you know, their priorities with their skin, and then being able to sell them a range. So I would have a target of, let's say, it's probably something like $5,000 a day just in cold canvassing. So you really learn how to sell, how to engage with people, how to build rapport with people really, really quickly, be able to strike up conversations and really be able to drill down into the actual priority that somebody had with their skin and then be able to sell to them. So I got that sales experience that way. And strangely enough, the Elabache counter was attached to the Clarins counter. So from time to time, that Clarins state manager would come by and say, hi, Nicola, you know, how are you going? Whatever it is. And then after 18 months, she came up to me and she said, well, you know, you took my advice. You've been on the counter here for, I've seen you here for the last 18 months or so. I'd really love to give you a chance with Clarins. Would you come over to our promotional team? So I did do that, worked on the promotional team for a while, and then she put me into a state training manager's role. So I was the educator for Clarins in Victoria. And then it just happened quite quickly from there, I was then promoted to national training manager. I commuted to Sydney back and forwards. I ended up being an international trainer for Clarins. And that was the most fascinating part of my career, because I was so lucky to be able to go and live in Paris. And my boss was Jacques Courtin Clarins. I reported directly to him.
Wow.
The most amazing man, and the most amazing knowledge that he was able to teach me through his own hands, because perhaps what people didn't realize was, I mean, he wasn't a therapist, of course, but he had the most amazing gift in his hands. And he taught me how to do lymphatic drainage, the Paris method, it was called back then. And he taught me how to make people feel really good about themselves from a spa and wellness perspective. Because when you look at the Clarins brand, I mean, especially now, we all know that that's not really what we would class as a clinical skincare brand. But back in the day, and still now, it was all about beauty, wellness, making people feel good about themselves. So I learned an enormous amount from him, and I lived between Paris and London, actually, and then trained all around there and also in Asia Pac as well. Came back, headed up the Clarins National Salon Division from Sydney. Back then, the Clarins did have a professional range in clinics and some spas, so I headed up that from a sales marketing training perspective. And then after all the years of travel, I was really tired, and I was only, I was probably only about 30 at that stage, and I decided to change companies, and I ended up working for another French brand, and again kind of worked my way up to be the general manager of that company. So that's really how it all started, and I just knew that that was my career path. It was in this corporate side of the beauty business, because I felt that I could affect more people. I could affect other beauty therapists. I could train them how to do treatments, how to sell product, how to engage with consumers, I suppose. And so I just worked my way up that way.
That's so cool. I think perhaps these days therapists, and maybe it's just people in general because of this like on-demand system that we live in, but I think everybody wants the cool jobs yesterday, you know, whereas you were like, no, I'm going to go work for these 2 years. I'm going to get the sales experience. Then I'm going to go back and reapply. Whereas, you know, you see therapists these days who even aren't hitting their clinic sales goals, you know, their hourly sales goals, want to be the national sales manager or the general manager. And you kind of think, no, you need to do the work before you get that job. Do you resonate with that?
It is so true, Tamara. And like I said to you, it was a bit of a slap in the face to me as a young girl. You know, as I said, I'd been really successful in my own business, earning a lot of money. And then for somebody to say to me, no, you're not good enough, I was like, oh, wow, that was a real surprise. honestly, that piece of advice from that woman, and I will never forget her name, it was so valuable for me, but I suppose it knocked me down a peg or two as well, and it made me realise that there were other aspects to the beauty industry outside of what I perceived it to be. But that what she did for me was it set me up for success for the rest of my career, because I thought I was good at sales. But until I got into that situation where I had to sell literally ice to Eskimos, that cold canvassing that we had to do, that was like trying to engage with people that were not there to buy skincare whatsoever. They weren't having a treatment. They were buying perfume, or they were shopping for sunglasses or something. And, you know, you had to stop them, engage with them, and really just build that rapport, and then be able to sell, and then break your sales down, have a target, break it down, help motivate other girls to do that same type of thing. It was incredible. And then that just has translated right the way through my career. So it gave me, you know, when they say you've got to walk the talk, you know, walk the walk, talk the talk. That experience gave me that. So I think through my whole career, I've done the hard yards. I've been a salesperson. I've had to do BDM type work as well. And yeah, I've just been able to help my teams along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said there. I've never really thought about it this way, but the corporate side of the beauty and aesthetic industry, because I too, when I was in beauty school, my massage teacher looked at me and she said, "You are such a great therapist, but I can just tell your heart's not in it." And I said, "Yeah, I'm really loving the business side, but I'm not loving doing the treatment so much." And she said, "Well, why don't you just go do something else?" And I said, "No, because if I want to own a business or if I want to run a business, I need to know what the treatment is, you know, so that I can help my team." And I've never really considered it the corporate side of the beauty industry. And I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of therapists, and perhaps this is why we see the numbers in beauty school classes kind of dwindle down as we get towards the end of the diploma, because they go, "Actually, I don't want to do the treatments, but there's something here that I do like." That you've just given me a little bit of a light bulb moment there.
Yeah, well, for me, there's always been the two sides to the business, yeah.
Yeah, and so in terms of general management, which you said before, you've had some pretty incredible titles with BLC, Skinstitute, and now you're over at Aesthetics RX as well. Obviously, being general manager, you are there to build the business and really take it from a point A to point B. When it comes to building a business, are you, you know, like quite a strategy person, or are you more of like a soul-based type of person?
Yes, I'm a strategist. I'm all about the strategy. I ended up going eventually to uni and did an MBA and, learned the strategy side of things. And you have to have a strategy. You have to be able to build that roadmap and be able to look to the future and see where you're going to take the brand or the business, the company, whatever it is. But because I'm that kinesthetic person and because I'm so... my foundation is in that spa wellness type of arena, everything comes from a very grounded place. So I think it's a good combination of the two things, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think a lot of people, they want to lead with the heart and they want to kind of feel their way through. But we do always have those kind of, you know, those pillars and those objectives that we need to meet. And I think sometimes it takes a very emotionally intelligent, quite savvy person to be able to go, okay, well, here are the pillars, but at the same time, I do need to be flexible and I do need to almost be quite self-aware of myself and also the people that are around me as well.
I think for me, and I say this so often and it's coming up so much more lately, is that one of my personal values, my core value actually, is kindness. And sometimes that doesn't always gel in the business world. You know, I've worked in situations where I've been the only female in a boardroom. I've been, you know, working with bankers, investment bankers, brokers, boards of directors for the majority of my career. And it's not easy because that doesn't always ring true in that environment, but I've held that core value and I feel like I've operated from that my whole career. And actually I will never budge from that. So even when I've been surrounded by that type of persona in those types of environments, I've always operated with that same core value. Sometimes it's been good for me and sometimes it hasn't been so helpful, actually, because sadly that doesn't always work in those types of environments. But it's been something that has led me to where I am now, I think, and that is a place. Was probably the happiest, most wonderful working experience that I've had, apart from the days in Paris, of course, working with that.
Yeah, that's pretty special.
But no, right now I'm in a good place. Yeah,
that's interesting, actually, because I ask a lot of people about specifically business owners, you know, what are their values and do they run their business with values? But I've never really thought about somebody who doesn't run their own business. They still have to have their own values because
in any role, you are still contributing to the business. So that's quite interesting.
Well, you're still leading people and working with people, and you've still got to negotiate, manage stakeholders, all of those types of things. And yeah, I've just remained true to my own core values the entire time.
Yeah. I'm wondering then, have there been any moments along the journey that have surprised you?
Yeah, there has been definitely, and it's probably been in those types of environments where you've got to make decisions about what's best for the business, what's best for the people around you. Some of those times have been extremely challenging, but I think being able to go back to those core values and operate from that place has always been valuable. So when I have been surprised, you know, sometimes I just have to take a step backwards, just reconnect with me, my core self, and then make decisions from that basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's certainly more difficult now. I mean, you're recording from Sydney, you're in lockdown. As we know, Adelaide's just gone into lockdown as well. Melbourne's faced the whole brunt of the pandemic here in Australia. When you are faced with challenges, you've always got a little reserve tank, you know, which you can go, okay, I'm in fight or flight, but I've got my tank and I'm ready to fight and overcome those challenges. What do you think are the kind of the main traits that you really need to always have that reserve tank filled up so that you're not, you know, being exhausted and you're not reaching that point of overwhelm when you do have these challenges? Because obviously, you know, speaking of our friends in Melbourne who are like lockdown 5.0, there's only so much in the tank at the end of the day, isn't there?
I think that life balance for me is critical, and it always has been. In these corporate roles that I've had, the amount of hours that you put into the career and growing that career, climbing that corporate ladder, it's hectic. You know, the amount of hours that you have to do is nuts. And a lot of the work for me was travel based. So I would be probably half the time more overseas than what I would be at home. And it has always been really important to me to balance life. So I never say work-life balance. I always say balance my life, because work has been such a huge part of my day-to-day life that it's impossible for me to separate it out. So I think of life balance as my work, my family, my social time, my exercise, my mental health, nutrition, financial goals. All of that for me is wrapped into that subject of life balance. I'm also a yogi, actually, and always have been. So that has given me a very strong foundation of exercise and wellness, nutrition, all of those things, but also a foundation on which to build my personal principles and values, I suppose. So all of that is all wrapped up into one. And in times of stress, and yes, there has been many, not just recently with COVID and the lockdown situations, but right the way through my career, there's been crisis after crisis. You know, no matter what it is, it could be that all our packaging was on a shipping container in the middle of the ocean and the container fell off the boat. And so now we have packaging. What are we going to do? So many different things. And then working with people, there's always a crisis or there's always something going on. So if you can be well grounded, have those principles straight in your life, if you can be a balanced human being and get enough sleep as well as all the exercise and nutrition, that's something I really do, is prioritize my sleep, you can just work from a level-headedness and keep everybody around you grounded as well. And I think hopefully that's, I hope, a sign of a decent leader. And like you said before, through all the self-development that I've done over the years, one of the things that I have focused on a lot is myself, my own self-awareness. So I know how I affect other people, and I know how people affect me, and then how to balance that, working with different behavioural types, for example, learning how to communicate well. All of those things can help keep situations very calm, including this lockdown.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious to know what a typical day of a general manager looks like, because, you know, we know the therapist, we know the manager, business owner, you've got your sales team, you've got education team, there's obviously product and wholesale. But when you're the general manager, what kind of tasks are we looking at? What do you do all day?
So a lot of times I'm the one that's putting out the fires. So in my career, I've held so many different positions now that I'm able to do the job of lots of different people within a business. So whether that's from training, from sales, from logistics, forecasting, demand planning, formulating products these days, all those different types of things, a general manager can often step into any one of those roles or help people within those roles. So that's what I do. The day in the life of it starts off early for me. I'm a morning person, so I get up, that's when I do my exercise, meditation, what all of those things that I do, have a really good breakfast, and then hit the ground running. So I mean, now I'm in lockdown, you would think that it would be somewhat easier. But no, in fact, it's not. I'm speaking to more people in lockdown than what I did in an office situation, bizarrely. So the day in the life of looks like I might be speaking to the warehouse manager about, you know, some issues that they might have there. I might go on to do some forecasting and looking at, well, how many of these products have we sold in the last 4 months? What's the seasonal spikes? What's coming? What do I need to be aware of? Making sure that there's enough stock in our warehouse. I might do a training session myself here and there, because I love training so much that I just keep my hand in there. And a lot of things for me now are on the digital side. So I'm working with people in SEO and SEM, working on our website with my marketing team and digital people. Then I've got to do some board slides this afternoon, so I'm still reporting to the board of directors and making sure that they're all happy. So, yeah, that's the kind of day.
Yeah, I love it. A real mixed bag of different tasks. Mm.
After the break, Nicola shares with us her winning formula to building and scaling a brand. But first, we learn a little bit more about Aesthetics RX. Aesthetics RX is an Australian vegan cosmeceutical brand with powerful formulations made with biotechnology and enriched with botanicals. Their range of retail and professional clinical skincare is effective, safe, and cruelty-free, and their formulation charter bans the use of questionable ingredients like parabens, sulfates, and any ingredients derived from or tested on animals. Aesthetics RX's incredible retail line supports a range of clinical peels with a pre- and post-home care that enhances your clients' results. Opening orders are completely customized to your business because they know flexibility and personalization is the key to your success. For a limited time only, you can receive $1,000 worth of retail products, wholesale value, with your professional peels opening order pack by quoting BUTE1000 on your inquiry. Make an inquiry today to see if your business qualifies at www.aestheticsrx.com.au/become-a-stockist. Thank you so much to Aesthetics RX for making this episode of the Beauty Industry Podcast possible. And now back to Nicola.
So talk to me then about the product development side of the general manager role, because obviously we know now that you head up Aesthetics RX, which is an incredible range. And particularly the range is actually built around biotechnology. So in part of your task is to create new products and you know, sit on the development side of things. When it comes to kind of innovation, I'd love to get your take on biotech ingredients. I mean, what are they and how come you put them into Aesthetics RX?
Yes, it's a good question. When I first came to Aesthetics RX, I sat back, had a look at the brand, had a look at, you know, obviously everything that was happening with that brand and had done in the past. And what I could see was there was a capsule line of 9 products at that time. That was 18 months ago. There were 9 products in the range and they were fantastic. They were highly efficacious. They had a good ingredient deck, really good percentages of active ingredients, you know, substantiated clinical data behind all of those ingredients, all of those wonderful things. But there wasn't a very clear brand story about Aesthetics RX. It had been around for a while, and Martin Perelman, who I work for and who had acquired Aesthetics RX, I mean, he obviously knew it was a great brand, but when he asked me to join the company, that was the first thing that I had looked at. I thought, well, what is the point of difference about this brand? There are so many brands out there in the marketplace. I can't see right now what is that point of difference about this brand. So I had to kind of go in reverse and build the backstory, if you like. Normally you build the story and then you make the brand, but this didn't happen that way. I had to build the backstory. One of the things that fascinated me about this brand and will continue to in the future is that there were lots of ingredients that were from biotechnology already in this product deck or in the formulation deck. So I will continue that on. So that was one thing that I found that I could talk about from a marketing perspective that gave the brand that story, something a little bit different to talk about. So what is biotechnology? Well, really, it's biotechnology are ingredients, the raw ingredients that are made in a lab environment. Cosmetic chemists or scientists will use natural living derived substances that they can then use to create or produce very similar raw ingredients to what the original source is. It's not the same as synthetic, so I'll explain that in a minute. But the beauty about biotechnology and the reason I thought that this would be a great story or point of difference to talk about at Aesthetics RX is because from a sustainability perspective, biotech ingredients are really important and valuable because if we think about the land that is used for farming, and let's face it, the beauty industry is, you know, it's huge, and the raw ingredients that are used to make all these preparations and of all these hundreds of thousands of different brands, you know, that's a lot of land, that's a lot of water, all of those natural resources that go into producing those raw ingredients. But with biotechnology, you can take a raw ingredient, you can use microbes, yeasts, fungi, things like that to help, usually in a fermentation process, to then recreate that original raw ingredient, and you can do it in a lab and then you can continue recreating it. So you don't need the same land to grow the crops on. You don't need the water resources to be able to grow the crops and farm the crops and things like that. So another thing about biotechnology is that it's very consistent, so you can consistently produce very high quality ingredients, and you can't always get that in nature. So in the past with other brands that I've worked on, you know, I'd be sitting at my desk and a consumer feedback would come in, oh, I bought my whatever cream this month and it looked a different colour to the cream last month.
Yeah.
That's true. With natural brands, you can't determine what colour is nature. You can't determine what the season was that's grown the crop this time around. But with biotechnology, everything is pristine. The colour is the same, the smell is the same, the texture, everything about the ingredient is the same. And what's even more important is that you can control the quality of the ingredient. So you've got a consistently very, very high standard of raw ingredient that you're using in your formulation. So let's think about essential oils, for example. You might need 4 tons of rose petals to produce that small couple of litres of rose oil. Mm. But in fact, biotechnology, you can even use in recreating essential oils now. They're using fungus to do that, again, in a fermentation process to recreate that. So you don't need those 4 tons of rose petal leaves that went into that little bottle of essential oil. So to me, that's fascinating from a sustainability standpoint. And we know that in the beauty industry, well, in just industry, we want to have sustainable choices. We want to be using renewable sources. So for me, biotechnology was a real winner when I thought about how we're going to talk about this brand.
Mm.
Already using biotechnology. And so now every time that I'm going to produce a product, one of the pillars of the brand is biotechnology. I mean, there's others, like, you know, our products need to be vegan. They must never have been tested on animals. The raw ingredients can't ever have been tested on animals, those types of things. But now I'm also looking for bioidenticals. So could be peptides, could be the different types of hyaluronic acid that we use in our brand, squalane. There's so many that we use at Aesthetics RX that have been produced by biotechnology. But it's different to synthetic. So a lot of people think, oh, it's produced in a lab, therefore it's artificial, it's synthetic. Mm. That's not the case. It's very, very different. So biotechnology is taking the living cell and living substances like microbes and fungus and yeast and things to ferment and grow ingredients close to the original source, whereas artificial or synthetic ingredients are not created from living substances. They're created from chemicals to be somewhat like the natural ingredient. So that's how they're different.
Yeah, wow, you're nerding me out over here. It's so cool.
Super cool. Yeah.
I really love that. And I think our consumers, obviously, they love the consistency, you know, and I hear what you're talking about so much when they complain about the colour or the texture or the tone of a product, which they love so much, and then they repurchase it and then it's changed, you know, and it's really difficult to have a response back to that, and they're not always so understanding. But then too, I think now clients are very, very aware of the impact that the beauty industry makes on our earth and on our planet. So they're consistently asking, you know, do you have a more sustainable product? Or they're even saying things like, leave the box, you keep the box, I just want to take the product these days. So to go, okay, well, further than the box and the actual container, the vessel that the product is in, the actual product and ingredient formulation itself is also helping, you know, the planet last longer. That is really, really cool.
Well, it's so true. One of the things that really used to irk me was palm oil, for example, in the beauty industry, in other brands. Mm. I would go to the chemists and say, I do not want to use palm oil, you know, amongst many other things. But that particular one, you know, those harrowing images of orangutans and the palm plantations being destroyed or forests being destroyed. I'm a massive animal lover, vegan, all the rest. And that thing just killed me every time when I could see palm oil or its derivative in any of the products that I produce. Whereas you don't have to do that. There are biotech alternatives for palm oil even.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's going back to the raw ingredient source. So, yeah, I love it. I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, yes, I can hear your passion. And speaking about ingredients, one of the things that I really appreciate about Aesthetics RX is that you do work with a lot of Australian Indigenous ingredients where possible. And you were talking about those pillars of the brand before. Why is it, because I know it's not always the most cost-effective to work with Australian ingredients, so why is that something that, you know, you try and focus quite heavily on?
What we focus on, what's important to us is to produce the brand in Australia, and it's an absolute bonus if we can get to work with Indigenous ingredients as well. We would choose Australian ingredients where we think it's the best possible ingredient for a formula. For example, Kakadu plum. I mean, it's a no-brainer. It's the richest source of vitamin C in any botanical anywhere in the world, so of course we're going to use that. But we will look elsewhere for ingredients. We're not particularly wedded that we must use ingredients from Australia. We are wedded to the fact that we will always be owned and produced in Australia, and if we can, we'll work with Australian Indigenous ingredients as well. So that would be our standpoint there. We're wanting to support local business. Just actually in with the whole pandemic, the fact that we did produce or do produce our products in Australia was a huge advantage for our business and many others actually. From a supply chain point of view, we were able to still obtain our product where many others were not able to. We were able to jump in and help a few businesses actually where their original brands or the brands that they'd been working on, they weren't able to get supply. So we didn't have that problem, fortunately. So that's just another advantage of being an Australian brand.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking you probably kept so many Australians in jobs, whereas many other brands were turning down staff and you know, going through stand downs and things like that because they're manufactured overseas.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
Mm. When it comes to building a brand, and specifically Aesthetics RX, I feel like it's just blown up. You know, you've gone from zero to 100 really, really quick. And as you said, you know, you've probably attributed a lot of that success to going back to the roots and creating a brand story and having that beautiful story to share with clients and also consumers. Were there any specific steps, you know, that you put into place when thinking about building brands?
Yeah, it's the touch points of the brand. So once I had that brand story clear in my head, it took me quite a few months to figure that out. It all came from that brand story, and then I was able to apply that to every single touch point of the brand and make it all consistent. So that's what I've spent the last 18 months doing, I suppose. And Martin says to me, wow, the brand's just really started to take off. And I just think, wow, for me, yeah, it has been a slog that the 18 months of putting things consistently, you know, one foot in step in front of the other every single time. But it started with that brand story. It then went on into, you know, every single touch point, building out the pillars of the brand because there were none, building out the core values of the brand, the look, the feel. And then from there, I engaged a PR agency because I then wanted to communicate that out further and be able to build the social proof of the brand as well, because let's face it, that's what's important these days. I rebuilt our website. I started producing and using, you know, much more relevant content and images, colours, those types of things for our brand that I think attracted consumers to the brand. What else? I built out some new training programs for our team. I put into place all the back-end measurements and metrics so that I could see, you know, visitation to our website, who our consumer was, all of the back-end kind of things that gave me lots of data to work from. And, building on the SEO of our website, making sure the content was all there, the right information, look, feel, colours, all of those things. And then at the same time as doing all of that, working on new product development, because the range had been the same for many, many years. It just had that core range of 9 products. And now I think by the end of this year, we'll probably have about 20. Mm. So, and plus a whole professional line as well. So it has been an incredible speed at which it's happened in the last 18 months. But, yeah, it is kind of exploding just now, and we seem to have just really captured quite an audience at the moment. Yeah.
Very, very cool. 18 months is fast. Yeah. I'd love to just get 2 pieces of advice from you just to wrap up the episode today. I think there's so much value for business owners who are owning their own product business or creating their own range. What would you say to them? Because it can feel very overwhelming. Okay, I want to start my own range of products. Where do I start?
Yes, this is very true. And actually, I have done quite a bit of consulting to startups in that area. And the thing I go back to all of the time is get that brand story straight. Because if you don't have that, if you don't know what your reason why is, why are you doing this? What is the brand? What are we trying to communicate here? Then, you know, it's very, very difficult to go from there. Yes, everyone would love to have their own skincare brand, but, you know, why? What is it? What's different? What's your point of difference? How can we communicate? Where is the story? I'm doing your Club Beauté. I'm doing a session on that, and it's the 10 essentials in business, and it's all about that. It's brand story. It's building a brand personality. It's building your brand guidelines. All of those things are so important. That comes first before you can start thinking, oh, I want to use this packaging, or I want to have this ingredient in my product. You've got to get that backstory right first. You'd rather not do it from the other way around, which is what I've spent the last 18 months having to do.
Gotcha. And then we also have a lot of educators, account managers, BDMs, people in that kind of what I call the middle tier space. What's your advice for anyone who's wanting to level up and then step into a more managerial leadership role, be that general manager or operations manager or CEO or whatever that kind of title looks like?
Don't be frightened to take a sidestep or even a backward step sometimes. To be able to get the experience on the ground so that you can walk the walk and talk the talk, and you can speak from a place of experience. And so I've done that probably a couple of once or twice, that very first time, and there was another time where, yeah, I've taken a sidestep just to be able to then propel to the next level the next time that opportunity comes around. That would be a useful piece of advice. Oh, and I think also who you surround yourself with is really important too. You know, I've always tried to make sure I've got a mentor sometimes a coach, sometimes I've paid for coaching, executive type coaching, but I've always tried to surround myself with people who know a lot of stuff about very specific things, so that if I had an idea or I needed some assistance on a particular subject where I wasn't the expert, I would be able to call on that mentor and say, hey, what do you think about this? Can I just bounce some ideas off you? And amongst the women mainly that I've worked with throughout my career, we have built a network where there's specialists us in different areas, and we're always calling each other, can I just bounce this off you? And it just, I think that's really important, not to be frightened to ask for help sometimes, not to always think that you have to be in control. It's okay to need help, to ask for advice from time to time. It doesn't make you look weaker.
Absolutely. And as Brené Brown would say, it's just harnessing that vulnerability.
Yes, exactly right.
Very cool. Nicola, thank you so much for spending some time with me this morning. It's been absolutely divine getting to know your career history and also just all of the innovation and projection of a very cool brand being that of Aesthetics RX.
Thank you so much for having me, Tamara. It's been wonderful to speak to you again.
Wow, what an episode. So much for everyone to take away from Nicola's career journey that I hope you enjoyed hearing about today. Nicola's advice of walking the walk before you talk the talk is one I think we could all use a little reminder of. Do the job before you ask for the job, as they say, and look how much all of that experience Nicola gathered along the way is helping her to be the true leader that she is today. As Nicola mentioned in the conversation, she has recently filmed a very special video for our Club Beauté members on the 10 essential steps to starting a business, be that physical business in the industry, a product brand, or a company. So if you're not already a member, becoming one will give you access to that video and many more. Basically, you get access to videos like Netflix, just all catered to the beauty and aesthetic industry. If you're interested in seeing the work that Nicola has been doing for Aesthetics RX, you can click through to the show notes to visit their website or go and give them a follow over on the gram at Aesthetics RX Skincare. Us, of course, well, we live at Beauté Industry and you can come and say hi to me at Tamara Reid Beauté. Always appreciative of your ears and your support. Until next time, stay connected.